Channel 2 Right and the beginning of a visit with Bob and Darcy Sterling this Sunday, the 26th of January, 75. Channel 2, Channel 2 Right and the beginning of a visit with Bob and Darcy Sterling this Sunday, the 26th of January, 75. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of a visit with Bob and Darcy Sterling this Sunday, the 25th of January, 75.
There weren't too many of them. I managed to catch most of them one at a time. I really am sorry about the book.
All I wanted you to do was to pick out some of the passages that you had, had sort of got it in your mind. You don't have to have the book, you know the
best. Oh, that's nice of you. I tell you, the way literature works for me is that it becomes a part of my thinking, and I can't ever separate it from me anymore.
I know what you mean.
I don't remember the details, but I sure, the impact of it stays somehow.
Yeah.
I can't use literature any other way.
Well, you don't use it professionally.
No.
You don't use it as such.
Mm-hmm.
See, I have to slice it up and be able to handle it.
Tell where it came from.
Yes. Or, in a reasonable extent.
Yeah.
I'm not analytical. But the writer had such a large influence on a lot of people, didn't he?
Me, then. I can speak for me.
Yeah.
Tremendously.
Yeah. Tell him you're calling back.
I think his daughter says, at least, that what he wanted to be remembered for was his reverence, concept of reverence for life. That was where he saw himself most involved, respect and reverence for life, all life.
Yeah.
Are we interfering with your life today?
No, we set this day aside for you.
And I think that impressed me, the awareness that there is a lot of life that we're not aware of, and that we don't take very good care of it, and take it without thinking, without actually seeing the connection of it to what we are. Story is that he would go along and pick up worms after the rain to keep from walking on them.
Oh, really?
And set them off into the grass. You know, a very delicate respect for all forms of life.
I get it. You move so fast. I try to get Clay to move like a normal human being. She races.
Hmm.
Just like a 5-year-old.
I'm trying to slow down. I don't know about Faye, but I know about Bob. He's too fast.
So then I don't mean in that particular sense. I just mean in those quick motions. Just like a child, he won't walk across the street, he'll race, you see.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that way you've got no chance of missing him.
Yeah.
See, as you just come out of the place gradually, we can sort of
accommodate,
make a two-lane chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't know that about cycling. Well, now, how would that affect your way of going about things, Bob?
Well, simply in the sense that there's so much more at your fingertips than you're aware of, that you can begin to see the depth of any little thing rather than the superficiality of so many things. You don't cover quite as much ground, but you cover it maybe a little more thoroughly.
Well, wouldn't your biology and all do that for you? You wouldn't
it
need
does,
practice.
But my personality doesn't do that for me. My personality is, I think, the roadrunner personality. Just cover lots of ground without finding the meaning of it.
Yeah.
Other personalities are to find the meaning of things and not cover near as much ground. And I think I need that counterpart.
Oh, I see. I see. Just cover as much ground.
Well,
yeah.
Spread out all over the place and never refine much of anything.
Well, now that doesn't necessarily mean that you stay at home, folks, huh?
No, but it wherever I am,
yeah.
I think I can.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to go away though to find meaning either.
Yeah.
I think you.
Well, yes, and handling the plant through several stages will help.
It's good for me. Yeah. Good. It's good. Reminder that there's more, and you know, there's a depth to things. There's a whole. There are such things as small deep holes, and there are such a thing as wide shallow holes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm much more likely to dig the wide shallow one naturally, I think.
I'm gonna tell you, I've got a little tape in there,
mm-hmm.
a little cassette that I happened to make with Miss Mary and Marvin. They were over here one time.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can find
God for that. I've gotten less and less interested in food right now. It seems like a waste of effort.
I've got a machine in there. I don't have to rewind it to do it. Just rewind it.
Well, we don't.
Well, 3 minutes when you're used to a fast rewind, 3 minutes.
That's a long time, huh? You prefer cassettes to the reel now, or?
I don't like cassettes at all.
Mm-hmm.
If I have them, I use them, I make them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like to handle them.
Mm-hmm.
If I have one, I just put it on a reel.
Something beautiful happened on the way to the moon.
Shoot, about to bust all the pieces anyhow, you see.
Oh,
I think you're
this is
you're
the best audience you've had.
You're the best part of it. You're the least important part of it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell her something that happened to my boy.
Okay.
All they're doing is show me up.
Oh, that's really funny.
What you want, Tracy? Well, now, is that what you mean, sort of? That's right, sir. See, they don't have to go anywhere. They can look right, stay right there. And do. They do, you see. And I'll tell you, that's one of the handsomest animals I ever saw. And
yeah,
he was huge. And I saw it. I used to go out to the fence where he was, and I thought to myself, hell, this fence is not separating us. But he never would bother anybody. But what he said, don't you know, he'd come up to that aluminum gate, and it was 48-inch gate, and then set high off the ground, and he'd go over it flat-footed.
When he wanted to. Mm-hmm. When he was ready, yeah.
He just went back for a while.
And waited for the other bull to come at him and just toss him. I didn't think he was going.
But it's an interesting thing, how it's interesting how they identify with it and identify very intimately with it.
Yeah.
His whole life they try to bring into their life and their life into his, so they kind of blend together into a humanness of give him as much room to be in like them as possible.
Yeah. Well, Miss Mary has a sink right there at the big windows, and she can look out at a great big span, and then she can see through that way. And then she's got in the dining room, she's got a block of windows, she can see out towards the highway and all.
Mm-hmm.
So when she's at work and she cooks and cans and all those things, cleans, and she can see what's going on.
She's probably watching to see where he is.
Then on this side, she got a door out to the sort of a back porch, and she might have a little blank space in there, blind space.
She'd like to have that animal.
Yeah.
Wouldn't she?
Yeah.
She really would like to have him close.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Put you there. There's some toast in that. They just put that in there. Well, would that work out a little bit of what you said last night?
Could be. I'd like to understand their. There's no question they feel very close to us. And it's probably true,
but
the animal feels close to them.
But
probably.
It's one special bull. It isn't like it's all bulls or all cows or all, you know, because they have a bull they apparently don't feel that close to.
No, but I see them really close to their own bull in a sense. They characterize his feelings. And how he feels about the other bull, you know, the whole dynamic. Everybody is somebody.
Mm.
Everything is somebody.
That's right. He's a losing bull, but they still can see him.
They don't, certainly. They project it. So, I hate to use, you know, I'm afraid of offending. I'm afraid of the words offending. But they project themselves into everything. Yeah, I think so. I think you would be right. They feel for things, animals. Do you get this recording on plants too? This is just mostly the
animal
life.
Oh yeah, yes, they grow.
Yeah.
They grow stuff.
And they can identify with that too.
I hadn't thought about that.
Don't forget Palmer Christian.
Yeah, yeah, they grow stuff. That Palmer Christian, what do you call that? It'll cure the place of mold. Grows in the chicken yard and all. And she can tell you about that.
How that's doing.
Yeah.
Report on what it's doing.
She can talk about the Palmer Christian.
Mm-hmm.
How do you spell that?
I have no idea. That's not a common name, that's what we call it.
So it's interesting, the names are almost feeling names.
Christian.
Names with feelings. In them.
Now that one, that little thing is pretty rare. It's sustained, and with the talk, you don't get anything that's sustained. They'll tell you one little instant, and then let it go. It's spare. It's skinny. It's not filled out.
Doesn't have a continuity on the surface. You're talking about continuity of a story, or stories.
Well, they'll tell you the story, but they won't fill it out. They won't put in the people, or the scenes, or the incidents, or
the
smells, and looks, and all like that. So, in this case, what I did is hold it open. That's the term we got so we use out here. You just sort of you give them a green light, and you know, it's very easy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just show an interest. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And but the way they elaborate on it is to give another incident.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of working out one incident, they'll add this incident. Well, that's interesting too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's almost as though there is another dimension somewhere that has the continuity. The story is just sort of popped to the surface indicate that there is a continuity somewhere else that they feel. The feeling of is almost the continuity. The details, the stories are just little blossoms out of the, you know, that come up. But there's another process that they're following beneath the surface, like the feeling.
You got me now. I didn't follow that.
Yeah, I know.
Were you saying a while ago that ordinarily when you talk to these people, when most people talk to these people, it's just like to mention something, but they don't really talk about it in depth. But in the reporting, you get them to really go down deep and get all of the story, you know, all of the humanness in it, or all of the depth in it that you wouldn't ordinarily get if you just were passing the time of day with somebody. Is that what you're saying?
Well, are you concerned? Do you really care about understanding what's going on? You really aren't. You're interested in the process of what's going on. You don't care about why it's going on, or do you? Understanding.
I have no idea what you're driving at.
Well, I was thinking, someone like Faye, who has a tremendous feel for horses. Do you report that way about your horses?
I can't.
Are you sure you can?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was wondering if there's an underlying love here of some kind or identity that is made like a reverence for life around them that manifests itself just in incidences, but doesn't.
What do we mean?
Doesn't have a continuity on the surface.
Oh, your bread.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But underlying. My problem is I would like to know why that's so, and I'm not sure that that is even compatible with how you feel about it.
I never ask why,
okay.
Because I never find out. If or you know,
I don't either, but I still ask why.
You know, you bring it up and you touch it lightly, but you
never know. You never find out.
You never find
no,
out.
No, I think I understand. There's no. Sure.
You don't want to get stuck.
I don't either, but I can't help but ask the question.
Well, that's it.
And that distracts me from the enjoyment of the process or the what's going on.
Yeah, happy cheese.
Not right now, thank you.
Happy cheese and an apple.
And I think there's where I would probably frustrate you in that
no.
I'm fascinated. I think I feel what's going on, but I don't know that I'm satisfied with that.
Well, you see, I've been forced into a
critical
approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to stay away from that.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's present, but it enables me to get into it. Like,
can I do this? Is it all right if I do what's
anything you want to do?
Okay. I remember, now this was back before I, when I was just barely learning to take hold and listen.
Mm-hmm.
It was late summer in 68. And I had not seen any of my friends around here.
Mm-hmm.
What I felt was the talk like this was so fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that it just wouldn't last. They were all just so close to winding up, you see,
mm-hmm.
and there wouldn't be anybody else. And I listened to it, but I didn't have anything to put it in. My ears wouldn't catch it, wouldn't hold it, you see. And I just felt so sad. I just didn't go around them for several weeks. And then it was long in September after the new term started. I remember one Saturday I went over, stopped at Mr. Gilbert's. And just like we had never, like it was just yesterday, the day before, I'd been over there. You know how that is. And we had some of the finest talk. He was standing out there and trying to burn up an old tree right there that had berries on it. They had to cut it down, and then it's big. It keeps coming back out. And he's trying to burn it out. And he'd laugh and say what the birds would do after he threw those berries because the clothesline was hitched on it. But he went into other subjects, and his voice was so fine, and he had the heartiest laughter of any one I ever listened to. I tried to laugh like him for a while, you know, and I could keep going about 20 seconds, and by that time I was so tired I couldn't get my breath the rest of the day. Laughter is hard on your lungs. And I went on over to see Phil and Mabel, and the talk was fine. I took that little cassette along with me, and I took it down. And then over Mr. Morganson, and that was right at the heart of the big campaign of governor of Alabama.
Wallace.
And there was good, sturdy little talk. And I recorded and brought it home, and I called it the three studies. And that gave me the toehold. That enabled me to get into it. I saw, and I worked on it. Oh, I worked on it like a nigger. I worked on it day after day, and Faye would listen to it. She said, "What do you want to listen to that old stuff for?" So it wasn't interesting.
Uh-huh.
Much interesting.
Yeah.
And finally, I saw the thing. I saw that it was that it wasn't just plain old talk and hot air. You see,
mm-hmm.
It was solid information.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something I've never seen before. And pretty soon, almost instantaneously, I went another step and said, "The information is experience."
Mm-hmm.
It's what they have lived with, and then you can go a step farther and say they can go from decade to get decade, and they don't remember, it just comes to them. So you see how one statement and opened it up and gave me a sort of handle on it. And you go from that. Then another little thing, a statement that's close to it is, you see, that they have the faculty for reporting. They can handle it. They can bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even go farther than that. You see, even most people don't talk and don't report, and they do. So there is some feeling they have for it that enables them to go ahead and talk. Like Mr. Weaver was over here one day, and he was awful shaped. He just felt awful, just wretched, and he was running off at the mouth. And I said to him, "Mr. Weaver, you talk so damn much, I don't see how you get along." And he looked at me, you know, I just said, "I just talking rough to him." He could save his breath a little bit while he says, "You know, sometimes I feel if I couldn't talk, I'd die."
Explode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now that, you see, that's in the countryside, but it's not in the creative writing classes. They'll study about how to write, but they don't write.
You know, listening to that tape, I think somebody almost needs to hear an example of what you talk about, because it really,
yeah,
to me, looks entirely different. not entirely different, but it looks a lot different than when we were talking about it one day.
You
I mean, I think I see
now.
It in a different way than I did before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. True.
And I, you know, I don't know, but it just seems to me that the depth, it's like
the more bread,
the difference between
awesome.
A solo and having a whole symphony. I mean, a solo, you talk a little bit maybe, but the depth of the symphony behind is like the depth of the real person coming out in that conversation.
You have to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
The voice it says so much, doesn't it? Just the voice. Now, if you transcribe it, it don't say it.
That is, if you write it out.
You don't, yeah. You don't get
I can understand that.
The written word won't handle the voice.
Have you found a way to do that? You're still trying to find a way?
Well, you know, you have to try. You know, you have to make something of it.
I think that, to me, it's feeling. It's the reporting from feelings rather than from head. You know, reporting from gut experience rather than head experience. And
it's not, certainly not intellectualized.
There is no intellectual process going on. Almost the raw data that was taken in as it was experienced, coming right back out the way it was experienced.
Well, I see you doing the same thing I had to do. I keep looking around for terms. And the old terms don't work.
They don't work. I understand that. They don't describe anything.
I use raw experience. But you see, this is not raw experience. This is experience that's examined.
But examined from a very specific part of the awareness, not
yes.
the head.
Yes.
It's not the head, and it's not an analysis.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
But it has to be examined in order to be used.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, now, I went a little farther. And I made this statement. you see, they have to use it. Art is using. I don't care how you use it, it's art.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tell it, that's one thing. And if you retell it several times, it's still just a little bit more. And somewhere along the line, you see, they have to look at that experience before they can handle it. So it's art. Now it may be stringy.
It's flowing right out from the inside.
Yeah.
Natural flow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you looked at the what happens to yourself when you look back? If you're trying to recall an experience and you look back at the details.
Yeah.
And you look at the details first, and then you try to get the feeling of how it felt at the time, looking at details. That's one way. And then look back, instead of looking at the details first, look at the feeling, the impact of the experience first, and let the details flow in from that feeling. It's a different way of recall.
Yeah.
And there are different ways of recalling.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, Bob, I'm not especially good at that.
Nobody is.
Well,
our culture isn't. I know.
Oh, in our culture.
Our culture has forgotten that there was an impact of experience on life.
Yeah. Now, that's what I find, you see. That's what I find. It's in that culture, and we're going off and leaving that culture.
We've been educated out of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've intellectualized our way out of it. We have the capacity, though, Guy, I think. I don't think we've lost the capacity. We've been educated away from it. Have you tried this on children, 4 or 5 year old children, to see?
That's an interesting thought.
If they do this very naturally, before they're in school, before they get too much exposure to the outside, I would guess you'd find it.
Although they wouldn't have had the experience, maybe to.
Well, whatever their experience.
These people have
well,
had.
No, not in the breadth, but that there would be experience there that would be reported in the same mode, because there's no.
Let me tell you.
Okay.
That's
just
I have something that will fix you.
I bet. Okay.
The best
I
of
need
the young people, what I've heard, you see, I've had to learn so much. I just really started at the bottom. At the time, In 1968, the time I made that little thing we call the three studies, I thought you had to be 67 years old before you could talk like this, report on your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next fall, 69, Barbara came here, this little girl, Barbara Lorman.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been over in England for a year, solid, working with horses and horse people. She was 20. And she'd sit here, we'd be busy all day, and we'd come in and eat. And what I found was that pretty soon, ordinarily, we'd get talking, and Barbara would sort of make contact with it. And you could see it. She'd just sort of look ahead of her, and she'd sort of be quiet for a minute or two. And I had this tape recorder here. That's why when I had this thing here, I had the tape recorder on. I'd stick it out of the way so you couldn't see it. You wouldn't have to, you know, face it. But at that time, I didn't have it. I just stick it out of here and she'd have to face it.
She'd hold the mic.
Sometimes hold the mic. It's awful. It's just cruel. And that's what she did. It was the most extraordinary recording I ever heard. And she was 20 years old, and she talked about the horses and the experiences and the girls and the fellas that she worked with and the horses she trained and the personalities and nights at the pub and
mm-hmm.
at the carnival. Reconstruct them. Just sit there and reconstruct them. Well, now, she was a little scholar. Her father's a Shakespearean. And she was brought up reading. And she's a good reader. And she would have qualities about her, you see, that the countryside wouldn't have. For one thing, she would be open to suggestion. I could suggest to her that she wasn't quite full enough. So, you see, she wouldn't be much sense to her, but she would keep it in mind. I can't suggest that to them. Once I suggest something about the process, it is silent. Something seems to be the end of it. I think it would. Yeah, they can't. They can't be conscious of that. So you see what it did to me. It went from 70 years old down to 20. Okay. The best of the talkers that I ever had in here was Suzanne. She'd come in. Now this is the last summer when she was out here, and they had her parents took her. In-laws had moved up to Georgia, retired, moved up to Georgia, and she'd go up there. And she'd come back down here after a week or two up there, and her eyes would be sparkling. She was going to report, and she's going to report on her subjects. It wouldn't be on mine anymore. And this particular time is one of the last. We called it the Little Hoberts. They had bought the land from the Hoberts, or at least bought land that the Little Hoberts had spread out on. And there was a half a dozen of them, starting with a six-year-old, maybe a six-year-old, I guess. It went on up to a fellow that was doing the drag racing. And each one of them reported. And she put the words in his mouth about his reporting. And she did it right straight on up the ladder. And she said now her sister, Jim's sister, over at Atlanta, had got a six-year-old, and he can't hardly talk, much less report. And starts young, early.
I'd be interested in experimenting on anyone. See if that can't be done through a certain specific kind of way to get at that part. Don't you feel like we all have the ability, or do you think we don't have?
I don't think so. Now, I'm just talking, you understand?
I understand that, but there's an access route to this material that in our culture is hidden.
You see, they couldn't report on experience unless they had the experience. She's got to stand there at the window and watch that bull.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a certain quality to the experience.
Mm-hmm. I understand. I think I can understand that.
If you don't have that, there's nothing to report.
But isn't it possible that's buried? Made unimportant in the culture and is forgotten.
Well, you can't report on something you don't have.
Oh, the question is whether you have it or not. That's the question you're raising. You're saying that unless you experience it that the way they experience it, you don't have it.
You don't have anything to report on.
Well, I'd like to try just, you know, ask Faye a simple question and see if it doesn't change the mode of the whole reporting quality. Can I do that? Do I ruin anything if I do that just for a moment?
Yeah.
Do you remember why you started school in the first grade? Why you started school in the first grade?
Do I remember why?
Why you started school?
It was just something that was the family expected me to do, so I had to play.
But did you attend school in the first grade, other than physically? Why did you go to school in the first grade?
See?
Why were you there? Not because your parents said, but why did you go?
Well, in my case, I went to the second grade with my cousin.
What about the first grade?
I didn't go. But I mean, that's beside the point.
There was the second grade.
The second grade.
All right, when
I
you
went
started.
My cousin went with me. And I suppose, I can't tell you.
Slow it down a little bit and see if you can remember what you were experiencing as a person in the second grade, rather than describe the second grade and, you know, the reasons that the world outside reasons. Mm-hmm. What were the inside experiences that you were going through in the first grade?
Yes.
Can you put yourself back in there?
Yeah.
Right.
Walking to school. You see.
And what were you feeling as you walked to school? Why were you walking to school? What was in it for you? The impact of that.
And it was really something to be going to school.
Yeah.
You see. It was to be going, and because my cousin Rachel was 9 months older, and she had waited for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of, she had waited out for me just so we could be together, and so instead of starting both of us in the first grade, we started both in the second.
Mm-hmm.
We read at home.
Mm-hmm. It was being together.
But it was being together.
What was it like being together with Rachel?
Well, I just couldn't imagine, you know, doing anything without her. We were just so such good playmates.
What were some of the things you did in that
see,
spirit?
We looked at the clouds together when my daddy came over to bring the cow.
Can you remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, talk about it.
We'd lie on our back and look at the clouds. But you see, it's not real with me. I could sit there and look at
the clouds,
but it's not real.
The trouble is we're very conscious of what,
mm-hmm.
we're doing something.
Yeah, the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to almost an unconscious rendition of this after you get to feel the quality of the experience, and that's what I'm really talking about. There's a whole new other side to experience that we have residual in our feelings that is not in our mind, and it's an interesting thing for me is that. As we go in through the feelings, we begin to recall details that otherwise never were there. Just come on in,
mm-hmm.
from there.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I suspect
so.
That you could lay there feeling what it was like with Rachel
to
watch the clouds.
When you go back,
and talk
you
about
see,
that.
And talk to these people, that some of this comes out, but it isn't that we live in it and have it on our tongues like Miss Harris.
Oh, no, but that's...
Uh-huh.
But there's no interference with that in her life somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That all kind of... comes out. That's all the. That's
well, it's
what,
almost spontaneous. It's
well,
just
it is.
There all the time.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
But so does feeling become spontaneous when you let yourself have the feeling, and that's what I was trying to get at. In the process of trying to work out an issue in a person's life who, say, is uncomfortable with the way they feel about themselves, they don't like themselves the way
uh-huh.
they are. In trying to get at that, it's very easy to go back to the feeling of being a young person and go through that and call details in from the feeling rather than to try to give a rendition of the of just the details on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole new experience comes to light, and it does come out differently. And I just wondered if there was any connection. In it.
Well, I think what I'd call that, I mean, just in my
go ahead,
own
go ahead, yeah.
term, is you'd go back to the experience.
You go back to the feeling and find the experience through the feeling. It's a different, it isn't going back to the experience. That prevents us from knowing what really happened.
Do
you understand?
I put the experience first as the basic thing.
Well, I would do it the other way. But that's
well, I'm
okay.
Just talking with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. I understand that. I'm sticking my neck way out here, but I'm willing. I'm willing to with you. I feel good about that with you. Well, I do. May sound presumptuous, but I feel very much what you feel, but I would like to know more about it.
I did this little thing on Mr. Eastman. He was working on a stool. Let me see how that went. How did I put that for you? That I made a statement there that what you're looking for, the elemental fact is the experience. I wish I had that. I can't reconcile.
Yeah, I can't see it.
See, he was right over there. We were working on the other stool. But anyhow, we were trying to face the same point.
Yeah. Well, the thing that intrigues me about that is how much they project themselves into that animal, that bull. That bull, they were almost a part of that bull. They were describing how that bull was reacting in terms of their own feeling. They were feeling how that bull was feeling. They were feeling him. They weren't describing him.
Yeah, I think you go too far with the feeling of it. I mean, they had feelings, sure, but I don't see them putting their own selves and identifying exactly. They had, I don't know, it just goes a little further than that.
Well, the bull's experience was all their terms, though. You see, they were describing his experience for him.
Yeah, he could take just so much, and then he had to go over there and just show them that he wasn't afraid.
And they admired that. You could tell that.
They identified. They didn't. They weren't off on the outside admiring. They were inside experiencing the bull.
Yeah. He was part of their everyday.
Yeah, there was no boundary conditions between them and the bull at times, you know, in the story. I see that as their feelings, the real impact of them getting in, you know, describing what everything that goes on around them.
You know, it'd be interesting to carry that on a little bit. You know, this thing here, at 7 o'clock, I think it is, on Sunday evening, the Wild Kingdom.
Yeah.
And you see, they will tag a moose. And see what they do. They have got to locate the herd. And that takes 10 or 15 minutes of that time with their plane. And then they are out on the water, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd say for their purposes, they could just skip that and just go ahead and play like they've already found the moose to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The chase, you might say, is a part of their art, their program.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll clip him, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, they are not, so that my feeling is, I don't listen to it much. It seems pretty barren. I don't feel as if I've seen a moose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel the same. It's all been stage
kind
of. But they are avoiding this feeling stuff, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the real animal in a way. You're seeing something else. You're seeing their mastery over it, or their interpretation of it, or something.
Yeah.
And they won't pose still unless you look at the animal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like she does the bull.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Something missing.
Yeah, they don't want to be. They don't want to project. They want to be.
They want to manage.
People get in the way of seeing the animal.
Yeah.
Here you could see the animal, and the people were a part of it.
They don't
get weren't
in the
way.
You're right. They didn't get in the way and cover up.
You know, they weren't focusing the attention on themselves, that's for sure.
No.
Like a lot of people.
Well, now, in that sense, Bob, it's not personal. It's they're projecting.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense. In one sense, it's not feelings. In another sense, I guess, yes.
Well, the one thing I was surprised at is they're not describing details, outside details. They're inside describing what's going on. The details are inside.
We don't know what the bull looks like from
the. Haven't the foggiest idea of his you couldn't draw a picture from her description of what the bull looked like. That's what you said. But you certainly knew the bull.
It didn't seem to matter that you didn't know what he looked like.
It was much more exciting to hear her tell about how the bull was responding. And you didn't care about the look. So it's an inside kind. It's an inside response.
In talk, especially at that particular stage, the assumption is that you know the bull.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an information about how big he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because
you already know that anyway.
I guess they're assuming.
Yeah, a Brahma bull.
And you might say to him, "Oh, now, Miss Mary, this fellow sitting over here, he never seen that bull. Maybe you better give him a little bit more to go on." I don't know how they'd respond to that.
Maybe
you see, on the spontaneous talk, your control of it's limited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a laboratory thing in any sense of the word.
No.
Now you might do that, but I've never done it. I'm just glad to get on a little bit.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't ruin a chance to get the process going.
You see, that nobody I know but Guy could have held it open as long as he did.
Yeah.
And there's some more to it.
Yeah.
And got it and stayed on the subject.
Yeah.
Because they will go off on something
yeah.
else.
You have,
but I can hold it open without seeing
him
direct anything.
Yeah.
And
that's the truth. I'm the only one I've seen do it because I haven't seen many try. But a good number of people have been out here and they don't get anywhere.
We've all tried it, and I can't.
They don't get anywhere. Faye does it, and she does all the talking.
I find myself just absolutely incapable of holding it open without helping them along.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell myself, and I've seen him do it,
mm-hmm.
but if there's a pause, I've just got to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your face is going to close shut on you.
Yeah. And you
now you got to get so you can look at the pause and say, well, now it won't last.
Mm-hmm. There's more coming. Yeah.
We'll just wait and see how they bring it up. And you see, one thing, they got that feeling of hospitality. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's a sort of a feeling of civility. Where you're the guest of the house and they can't have too many silences.
Mm-hmm.
They have that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
They'll generally come forward with something.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you have to learn to do it. You have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you see, you can lead. I can lead.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, then look what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like Bob says, you see, they live in this. Every day, that's every day they look out and see things bring a bull out.
Yeah.
And he's part of their everyday life. And they haven't other things to interfere with it. See, they didn't run into town and teach a class or something else. They do other things,
mm-hmm.
though.
Mm-hmm.
But they do live around it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Cookie. I have more on Cookie than anyone else. And, Cookie sitting for the portrait. If I could find someone to help me, we write a book on him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much for one man to do. You got to transcribe so much and got to set down the experiences. Mm-hmm. We take Cookie back to the spring of '69.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good while. And we've had a pretty good sized dose of him all along. Sometimes he'd go for a month or two and wouldn't see him. And in his case, you see the society take over. He, as far as I see, he's incapable of taking hold of the abstraction that rapid growth will tear you down, tear you up, and he will knock him down, and he says they can't keep me down. But they do, you see. Everything he does, they knock him down. And at one time, he was needed to get enough money to make payments, and he was working three shifts. Well, I know that would stop him.
You know, you sort of talk about him.
But it didn't. Mm-hmm. And he keeps on going. Sometimes he looks just like he's on his last leg, and he's still going. But it knocks him down. And I think he's incapable of taking the abstraction. The change is so radical now,
mm-hmm,
that an individual has got to have something to hide behind. And you see, he still insists on. He had a rig to haul with. He won't haul for someone else where they'll take care of the rig, or he can use somebody else's rig,
mm-hmm,
and they'll pay him, and he still make good money. But he got certain reasons for not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
He got to own the rig, and when it breaks down, you see, he goes broke again.
Mm-hmm.
So you can trace it in that series.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I don't know whether it's just pessimism or not, but I feel that you see that world is too much for all of them, and it's crowding them to the point, you see, that they can't report anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And but somehow or other they manage to get back on the feet. But awful things happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Mary, these people on with the bull, they sold a piece of land. That's why I was sort of halfway baiting them about having so much improvements now, and that's why she says, "No, sir, we haven't either. We got a long ways to go." She don't want to be thought of as some rich lady. She's
mm-hmm.
not rich, but at least $50,000 more than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
She had to redo that old house. Her house was sort of like a cracker box. She doesn't bother me, but I've had good houses, and she hasn't. I suppose that's part of it. And it put a roof on it. And it couldn't get any of the old people, the old friends, the old people, the neighbors, among the neighbors to do it for me. They got the Sears, a crew of the Sears, and they really took them for a ride. And they prolonged it, and it did shoddy work, and wouldn't finish it, and everything went bad on it. And they had absolute no way of no defenses. No defense against it. I don't have many defenses myself, but I'm the way ahead of them. I'm tougher. They're not tough.
Haven't had to be, I guess. Bobby, you feeling badly?
I get the feeling I need to be in the sun.
Yeah, we're just sitting in the shade.
I need that warm, radiant heat out there.
I
don't want
to
take any chance of getting more. But
This puts us all to shame. This is the literary correspondence of Donald Davidson and Alan Tate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it shows, it says here what they do. In that correspondence, you see, and for 45 years, they respond with remarkable insight and often conflicting opinions to the new art being created by their contemporaries and friends in American England. You see, and then it names them all, T.S. Eliot,
mm-hmm,
and John Crowe Ransom, and Ernest Hemingway, and all, you see. As those books appeared, you see, they read them and wrote them to each other about them.
Mm-hmm.
About it.
Now
I mean, reporting on their reading, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
No, not necessarily that way, general. The quiet and friendly intelligence of the letters is an easy thing. I was acquainted with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the publication of the correspondence is a major event in the history, in the literary history of the South.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, that's, you'd think that the literary people do that, write letters like that, but they don't. I'm not literary in that sense, but I've read a good bit, and I've written a good bit, and I don't write letters like that, and I never receive a letter like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have tried to swap up on things like that, don't they? And the literary people I know, when they write to you, they won't mention that. They think they're talking shop,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or something. You don't get anything like it. Old John Fane is one of the editors of that, and I want to ask him if he's seen anything like that outside of Donald Davidson and Alan Tate.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it a shame, though, that
yeah.
you can't?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Now, you see, you're talking about the use of spice and all like that. Well, it's that literary life. Of course, you don't have to do fiction in order to be in a literary life. But I don't know. I'd say it's not common. Now you get learned people, and they may write to each other about the bibliography and how they're going to run the committee. But even that, it won't be readable. It'll just be in a sort of pedestrian kind of prose. Now this, I judge, I'm going to get that and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be readable. Just easy, readable.
Mm-hmm.
Prose. I don't know. It's, I see some of the young people, the ones that work with me. And, They're pulled in so many directions. You see, they can't do it. They're seemingly the society in the world they live in. There's so many distractions that pressures on them to keep them from doing this. Now you see, Donald Davidson, I took a class with him back in the 30s. I've known of him ever since, as a Vanderbilt. And well, he went to Breadloaf and spent his summers at Breadloaf, and he saw all the literary people there. I reached a number of them. It was one of the big writers conferences, you know. So he that's where he spent his time. He lived it. But you don't find it that way. I don't even hear of it.
Mm-hmm.
With all your high-powered, they see, so you've got to make a distinction in your terms. You say the people at the university, these high-powered literary people, well, they're not literary. They're learned. They're scholars, but they're not literary. They may be students of literature, but they're not literary.
Every time I listen to you, I get the feeling that you're talking. No matter what that subject or the subject of your experience with these people, you're talking about inner experience as opposed to the outward, outside experience. And to me, it's almost the need for us to concentrate more on our inner experiences, our the impact of the outside, not the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that just very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about inner experiences, both outside and inside. And I think you're talking about inner experiences. The impact on life, not life
itself.
Without
all the other things that sort of get in the way of
Well, they're all in the way.
No, but
you know.
They don't have it in the way, is what, I mean...
Well, he's talking about trying to achieve the concern for inner experience and leave all the outside trash aside,
yeah.
Push it aside to get at the impact of life.
Well, I, you take this little girl who moved out to Meganoke. She did this little book with me, The French Experience. Well, she can't get over that French business, and she got some young couple here who come over from France, and that's sort of nucleus for French group. People get together and talk French or talk about France or something. And she puts in her time on that little French circle. Well, now, in my estimation, all that does is deter She's got Eudora Welty over there, 3 or 4 volumes, that, and she's close to Eudora Welty. She could almost write like Eudora Welty. She has a gift for it. Mm-hmm. No, she hadn't even read the book. She just read Adam.
She's outside things. She can't cut through.
She can't cut it through those,
mm-hmm. Well,
all those
that's
things.
What you're
talking about. Mm-hmm. And her daddy is a fool crazy about the theater. He'll go to see a play when he's half dead. Well, what, you see Debbie winding up with her daddy down there to see this, the Gainesville Players or the,
mm-hmm.
or the Florida Workshop, somebody putting on a play. Well, that's, that takes energy. You see, you can't just go to play and then just dismiss it from your mind. It'll something will lodge in your mind, you see. You
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You can't read it like you would.
Well, this seems to be the cultural problem.
Yeah.
Is there's so much distraction from
yeah.
the inner experience that all we tend to do is react to our sense experience outside.
And then all that experience she has, she doesn't use. She doesn't use, she never reports to me on what happens at that little French
mm-hmm.
meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or what happens at the play, you see, it's all wasted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at least in a manner of speaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what she does isn't leading where?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you never know, you know, just what's going to lead where.
Well, at the moment, you're saying, at the moment. But
the best you can figure.
But Guy, I'm not sure, but in that experience, even though we are distracted at times in our life to the outside world, the impact isn't there. It isn't important at that time. But I think in reflection, one can find that the real meaning of what was going on to that person. And then the inner experience, in the what the inner experience was is not lost, is what I'm saying. It's not wasted time. Our childhood was not wasted time. Even though we were distracted by all sorts of strange things that happened to us because the parents and the people around us were more important than, say, we were. We were distracted into all that. But that wasn't wasted. It has to be recalled, though, differently than it was experienced in order to be useful. Does that make any sense? You have to recall it through a different process than you experienced it. Or you have to recall the process that wasn't important but was recorded. And I think it was recorded. The feelings. And then it becomes a completely new dimension that goes into making us what we are, you know. It's maybe the impact and not the details all along. Maybe it's the feeling and not the details that are the history of ourselves.
Well, children might be sort of indiscriminate in the experiences they have. Just,
mm-hmm.
Just
grabbing anything.
But she's 27 years old.
She is still... Not maybe has no identity, you know. Maybe really doesn't see a center that she can be seen by through others' eyes.
Yes, she's seen it, but she denies it.
And then there you are.
Well, she doesn't see it then. And she's the only one that's important that sees it.
Well, she can see it, but she won't.
Still not important enough to deny the rest of it.
Well, you've got other urges. You see, she has a civility to an extraordinary degree. And that sort of lays her open to anybody that comes along.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen
mm-hmm.
a little of that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
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 So you'd have to build a fence around them.
Mm-hmm. Lock them up, and then you would have nothing.
That's what the preacher did, wasn't it? He had a daughter that wandered, and he just took her home and chained her to the bedpost. Well, that gets such a sad report in the paper, but if you look at it from his point of view.
You might take my handsome man.
My own problem is to lock myself up in the directions, or lock myself up so that I take the directions even I think are important. Because I get distracted even from my own, let alone worry about you.
Yeah.
Sure, I can start 10 things and finish one of them. Maybe. I'll finish one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, I get so harassed trying to finish something.
Sure.
I quit.
Mm-hmm. So I can understand the distraction problem.
Yeah. Now, Miss Mary doesn't quite have it. Mm-hmm. See, I think she always has a presence of mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You do too, just outwardly at that rate.
You mean awareness of what's going on around her all the time.
She has that poise, presence. You see, she's not...
not easily distracted.
Physically. Actually, we're talking about the invisible processes.
Mm-hmm.
You really never know. You have to talk about them, but
mm-hmm.
you never know exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be destroyed.
It can be.
Yeah.
It certainly can be buried very deeply.
Yeah.
Or deeply. The interesting thing to me is how much I can recall, however, during those many years of childhood distraction, how much detail I can recall if I can get into the feeling of how it felt to be at that time.
I see that's your question to me.
Yeah. If I hear a piece of music that was played back in the 30s, immediately I can feel what it was like to be then, and then the details, and even names and faces come in that I hadn't thought of for years. A whole field of reporting. Now, whether I can report it or not is another matter, but I have at least the view of many details through that feeling that I never had otherwise.
You know, when you get into inquiry like this, you find out curious things, and some of them, you see, are usable. Now, the reporting of this, the way we do it, adapt it, you see, for our own purposes, is if you tell a story, the story has such an appeal, especially if you put a little violence in it, like Faulkner does in The Bear, where he has this fellow with the mind of a 10-year-old wrestling with the bear. It will distort the people. Story itself, so that if you want to get a view of the people, you're going to have to go easy on that story. Now, what I do, I leave the story out almost altogether. I do. I understand. I didn't write the book. And what I do, I just do it in a sort of a form of documentary. And what holds it together is a little sequence of ideas, a little sequence of insights that hold it together. Well. That didn't have a very great appeal, but it's the way I can do it. But an idea, if you write it, will also distort your material. And one reason you can see the bull better with Miss Mary is you don't have a story or an idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a little incident. And you say, well, it some idea is implicit in it. Well, maybe so, but you'd have to supply it. And I think by and large, whatever they report on, there is it does have a direction, you might say, but it doesn't. It's not strong enough to.
I wonder if it means anything if I would say that Mrs. Mary sounds like she instinctively responds to that ball, as though it was nothing but her instinctive response, a very natural instinct.
Well, Well, I've gone at it the other way, where she uses all her faculties. And when she looks at the bull, she's alive, alert. And when she reports on it, she's alert and uses all her faculties. And what happens, you can check on that, because if she feels bad, she can't talk. And if a person gets a little ill health, one of the great talkers
can't talk. Well,
it takes vigor somehow or other. It takes vigor to make the Constitution work. But it's not ideas.
Oh, no, I understand. I'm clear on that. I think
the
I
vigor,
understand that
somehow or other. But the vigor is something that makes the faculties alive. And I see the word faculties is just broad.
I understand.
You could use instinct.
I'm interested in that in another way, you know. But it sounds you and I sound like we're really feeling this through the same kind of thing in a completely different arena. But so close, it's scary.
The terminology.
It's scary.
When I said
instinctive responses, those have a very specific meaning to me, and are probably different, and so the words get in the way. But I see not only biological instinctive responses that we have talked, that we know very well about, but there are psychological instinctive responses that we have. And those are our basic feelings, not sadness and joy and sorrow and hate and all the name feelings are not really pure feelings. Those are a combination of logic and feelings, and they include ideas as well as basic feelings. But down inside, in our innermost experience, lies a totally instinctive response to things. And the head has to be absent in order to experience in that form.
And that's
her need to be close to the bull, to be close to everything in nature around. She can't abstract herself from anything, or she's lost. She's close to everything that she is close to, physically. She feels close, inwardly. And so her instincts can flow in and out of things without even differentiating or discriminating or analyzing. She's just a part of it. And even the animal probably understands that as well as she does. That's probably the interesting part. It's not a figment of imagination at all. You know, you really have to say, you can't, I can't say that she doesn't know what she's talking about.
No.
Can you?
No.
No, you can't.
No, I think she comes closer than I am.
For anybody to say, well, you know, you don't know what you're talking about is nonsense. Because she does.
Yeah.
And she feels she does, and there isn't any convincing that she doesn't.
And if she, another thing, if she reports on the bull another time, she won't give you the same reports. And your public figures, like your county agent, he'll tell about the bull, and he'll tell it wherever he goes as a sort of a story that interests people, but he'll get so he'll play the same notes. He gets awful tedious. And mine, he quits looking at the bull. I don't think she did, at least. I never called her and quit looking at the bull.
Well, you don't realize what a phenomenon it is to have a big Burma bull jump a gate, flat-footed, standing flat.
Yeah.
And Debbie has seen him. I mean, we don't have her word. We know that he does it.
Yeah.
Well, and they take it just as, you know, it's just all in there.
It just happens. They saw it happen,
yeah.
So it happened. They experienced it.
And, you know, my feeling was to say, well, it isn't so. They can't be. I don't have a horse that can jump that high, and they're trained to jump.
Yeah.
And this is some bull. You look at a Brahma bull and you see.
Yeah.
But you see, that's not it.
There's a lot to go over the fence.
That's not the point with them at all.
No. Well, I have a feeling, I don't know how they feel about why he does it. Maybe there's no reason, but they feel like he does it to come to them, or he's interested. It's not just the fence that he jumps, he comes to them.
I feel like they don't care why. They just
No, but I'm saying the feeling behind it is that he's come to visit again.
Yeah.
I see.
You know, he's now come.
Because he wants to.
Yeah. And if the draw is strong enough, he could jump anything to get there.
Yeah. The height doesn't matter.
He can do anything if, you know,
he wants to.
Yeah.
And there's one place in the fence that he likes to go over. And he'll go over that. There may be a low place somewhere else, but he'll go over that place that he likes every time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He likes it.
Mm-hmm. Sure enough, he does.
I wonder if you'd have to commission him to it. I'm thinking about young people, you see, the ones that we have access to. I wonder if it wouldn't do them good, help them settle the nerves, if they couldn't listen to things like this a little bit.
Sure.
And if they could see other people. You see, if they saw Miss Mary, they couldn't see this in her.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken me all this time, you see, to get it to the point where it happened. And then it doesn't, and even then, you see, it happens in one place more than does another. You say if you catch her in the kitchen when she's cooking, she'll just talk about it a long time. But see, they'd never be there, and if they were, it would, well, they'd never hear it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this whole thing is, they don't have access to it.
I have a feeling that it would take some time to hear what you hear for anyone who, I'm sure it would.
Sure.
It would take a course through the course to finally, and maybe in 12 or 15 weeks, maybe there would be some inkling of what you're talking about.
Yeah, but just the quietness of it,
yeah.
of the experience of watching the animal. And it would be a sort of an offshoot of what you were saying about Swanson too, you know,
mm-hmm.
in kind of a
That's fascinating.
You certainly don't get that in the anywhere I go, in the movies or the television.
No, not even in the ordinary interaction, social. Certainly not socially. No way to interact with people.
Bob, I think you gotta somehow or other consider that what they do is mental. Now you use the word instinct, and that's all right. But I think it ought to be on a pretty high level of mentality.
You did hear me say psychological instinct.
Sure,
okay,
that's right.
And that would include
some
mentality.
That's right. Well, I use the word mental. Just by way of rather than intellectual or brainy or educated, you see, mental is sort of by itself. No one uses that term, basically. Yes.
Well, I'm hung up on a whole vocabulary right now, trying to see a structure and put an experience around a format, which is an idea, which would be interfere in some ways with what you were doing, but. It's trying to develop a way of looking at myself that is different than have been encouraged to look at myself ever before, and it almost as though you need some kind of a scheme that is different from the scheme you've been taught to keep you away from the scheme you've been taught. You know, it's kind of a trying to put a new vocabulary and a whole new experience in here to keep the old away.
Sure.
Because it's interfering, it comes in all the time.
Well, the basic unit, and you can't go past that by way of analysis, is an experience.
But there is more basic elements than that in experience. That's what I was trying to say in my scheme.
But for the mind to work, you have to see it. It has to have a certain magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
And some little incident, you see, just a very small incident, and all you need is just putting out some augustum.
Mm-hmm.
That's large enough.
Mm-hmm.
Or watching the bull eat pellets and come over the fence.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Either one would be.
Just you need a little activity with the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm just searching for terms.
The term that I would use, and it's probably not bad or good, is that that experience for me was both psychological and somatic. It was both body and mind involved.
Yeah.
So you might look at the somatic response as well as the psychological, look at them separately or together and see something entirely different.
Well, they never think just separately. They always think on the feet.
Oh, of course
not.
And
the thinking is a part of the action.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't thinking when we were doing it what was which one of them was most important to me. But I can now reflect back with you and talk about doing that and perhaps decide which part of it was the most important or what part of it happened, what happened somatically and what happened psychologically by setting those vagustrum up there. We could reflect on that and the experience would be probably... would take on new meaning or different meanings depending on which part of the experience we looked at.
Well, you see, it wouldn't be very interesting to look at my part of it.
Sure it would.
Because I'm jerky.
No.
And you see, they're not jerky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They take hold in a way that's satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If he pulls that old trailer out there, you see, like he's going to load an animal, you see the frame of oil walk away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the action is slow, but it's also visible.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of it in a little bit of time.
Yes, there was.
Oh, my. There's a whole relationship comes in from that that has a great deal of breadth just in one little...
Mm-hmm.
Pulling the trailer out and the Brahma bull walking away.
Yeah.
Much more. It's almost, that's only a symbol in the Jungian sense. There's, all they put in there are the symbols of the meaning, but the meaning comes in their words and the way they approach it. They see it.
Yeah, that's really complicated.
I know. I probably drive you off the wall sometimes.
I think of that other little part of it too. You see, he was such a big bull when they took the trailer over there to get him. He was afraid the bull would turn around twice and make the splinters of that trailer. And instead, you see, the bull did the thing, and as soon as he started moving, the bull just lay down and took it easy. Well, I've seen animals, you see, especially a big animal like a bull, when if he moves around, he goes on this side, and your whole rig sort of veers over to that side.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, well, now... And then if he goes in the back, you're just afraid the trailer's going to hike up. They're so big.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Marvin handles it. It's a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
And he's out of her hands.
Mm-hmm.
These people have to get in the sunshine.
Yeah, we really need to go.
I had forgotten about that.
Well, good.
I'm not.
You what?
I was going to say, I'd like to stop by Jeff's and say hello on the way in. Can we do that? Since we're out this far.
That's pretty over there.
Yeah. Have you been over
there? You been to Jeff's?
No.
You know where it is, though.
Well,
I know
generally.
Can I knock my pipe out outdoors and then I'll be right back?
Well, I'm really glad to have heard the tape. It makes it much clearer. I still don't know.
Well, I ought to have one to give him. Let's take it home and listen to it.
That was really very explicit, isn't it?
You could listen to it while you cook, while you wash dishes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't bother.
Can I help you a little bit?
No.
I want to know something practical. Is there any land around here for sale at all? Small,
Bob, I imagine there is, but you've got to have your eye on it to see out for it before you find out about it.
On the highway over here, there's some advertising that's incredibly high.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I can't say a thing. People come up here, you see, and ask me if I want to sell the place. Yeah. And they say, well, would you sell 20 acres? And would you sell an acre? And I like that. Well, I don't know them. Never saw them before. And So my answer most of would be that I don't want to sell any.
Well, I'd like to begin to create an option with the. I think we're going to get a completely different definition of our culture here in the next 10 or 20 minutes.
You suppose?
I think so. I think we're going to have to turn around, if nothing else, but on fuel and energy.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that then that sponsors a whole much of the qualities, perhaps, of life that are now ignored. At least I would hope that, and I'd like to begin to look at that possibility of getting out of town.
How are you signing your name?
Robert W.
Well, you are practically out of town now, as much as you...
Well, but you'd be surprised. We're now getting that area behind us beginning to get filled up. And when that gets all filled up, I'm not sure that's where I want to be locked in.
Well, you better, the quicker you do something about it, but you've got so much there to go off and leave, as they say. Look at that, all over again.
But all that kill and stuff can be moved. All that stuff could be moved if we wanted to. The ceramics and all. There's nothing there except the house is permanent.
Yeah.
And then as we get more and more locked in, the activities that we can be free to operate with, like the garden and the flowers and the plants, you know, the plant propagation.
Yeah.
That's all going to become unusable. She has to reduce, for example, on the glaze firing. And fire some black smoke out for a half hour. Well, you can't do that down in the middle of town.
I do.
It's carbon you do now because you've got nobody around.
The professor says it's not any different than driving your car downtown and back. But people don't know that, probably.
But it's just the sight of it would scare most people.
Mm-hmm. See this black smoke coming out for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to be in the middle of it very, very tightly.
There's no other way, I guess.
Well, there isn't, unless we had money to buy, ground around us, and that.
Well, I was thinking about the whole situation of the country.
Oh, the country's got to change.
Morning paper said there were 1,800 new people Latcher counted this past year. Some of the one of every four was a birth, but 1,800.
I think the industrialization is turning. We're going to have to turn it out. We don't have energy to feed industrial giants, and we need food to feed people, and we don't have either. And I think it's got to change.
It's bound to.
It has to. There's no way.
It's such a things really. You look at the congressmen and see how they talk, and you think, well, they don't ever do anything. But you see. All the service stations got that unleaded gas pump now.
Yeah.
Well, look how fast it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you say they're not using much of it. I know, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Just the things come so fast.
Well, I think within the next 4 or 5 years we're going to have no big cars. I think we're going to have to go to a very efficient engine and a very small power plant, which means that we'll be Cadillacs and the big cars.
I wonder in that same regard if it's going to be a problem being farther away from, your transportation back and forth.
Not with a small, efficient car. Yeah, I think the compromise is being where the right place, but it's not clear where the right place is yet.
Mm.
But if you have to eat, if you have to grow some of your food by manpower rather than by fuel,
mm-hmm.
fossil fuels, then you've got to have more room to do it, and you've got to be able to do it at a slower pace. It just seems like to me right now it feels right to begin to look for another option, whether you ever develop or not to know that.
Dorothy was telling me about someone that came the Sperry plant with you, who recently
yeah,
left?
The presently.
Fred Rolf was leaving Sperry and going someplace else and got laid off.
You know, Sperry was closing down, is closing down in April. They will be completely out of that plant in April. And they're trying to relocate some of the older men that are still there that came down with it. Two of them went to one of the other divisions, and last week they laid off 1,200 people. Two of them went with it.
One guy,
so
1 year
from
minimum retirement.
They uprooted their families and their homes here and went someplace else, but it only lasted.
One fellow was 1 year from minimum retirement, and the company said, well, sorry.
They just couldn't manage that thing. But I think we have to now look at our own resources to see what we can do for ourselves more and more,
mm-hmm.
instead of working for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the manager of that plant right now, who over his whole lifetime up to this point, he's 45, I guess, I know, 45, who's always been somebody in a subsidized
mm-hmm.
program. And
yes.
There's nobody now in terms of self-worth, mm-hmm. self-worth. Not able, nowhere to go paddle himself. So now he has to redefine not only his profession, but who he is at 45.
Yeah.
Against his will, as a matter of fact, not voluntarily.
Yeah.
I think that's all the older Jerry is, 45.
So he's got a whole, everything, his world and psychological and physical is all now to be redefined. I'd rather do it on a slower pace and voluntarily begin to do it.
Yes.
Just
yes.
sort of ooze into it a little bit.
Yes, by all means.
Feels better that way.
Much better. Well, you know, I think one of the things that I don't know that much about it, but I just have a suspicion that one of the things that you could make something off and you see and it would mean a lot to everybody is when you left Sperry, you said, went into all this other stuff, all those things that you tested out and what you found, you see, one thing is that shifting from your electrical mentality to something to sort of
electric mentality,
whatever it was. I mean, that thing.
Yeah.
I tried to get into the engineering college one time, and it was painful to me. Because,
yeah.
you see, the whole thinking down there. When they thought when they thought about the language, they thought about proofreading.
Mm.
Well, I thought about just applying it all up and starting again.
Yeah.
Well.
Didn't go down so well. No. Well.
I didn't.
I've left a trail of where I've been, and I'm leaving a trail now of where I've been. Maybe not in the details, not in reporting style, but right now in the process of trying to record it in another way, in a reassessment of experience through feelings, and that's what I've been talking about here today, is very much that same thing. The experience that I had as an engineer was pretty much a thing experience, a world outside physical experience that you could only really look at. Anybody would see it in terms of hardware. And yet there was an impact of all that on me as I was doing it. And it's that impact that I'm much more concerned with reporting than I am the details. Details aren't worth a hoot by themselves.
The circumstances.
But what was happening to me was important. And if I can reassess all that and get at that, which I am, I think I can.
Well, if you leave all the circumstances out, you're going to put it in abstract.
Oh, but the circumstances come in from the impact rather than create the impact. In other words, you don't leave out detail. You bring them in a different way. You bring them in only when they're relevant to the impact.
Well, the experiences. See if the bell lying down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Just the incident. The incident. Now, we got some of the tapes and tried to use them and found out we couldn't use them. They were just solid talk.
Mm-hmm.
So we abandon them. We don't use them anymore. We use them to kind of, you know, get an idea.
Well, there has to be somebody there to interpret that, what the bull was doing when he was lying down, and do it with feeling, and do it with relevance to human beings.
Yeah. Well, you can have
the bulls lie down.
Yeah, and the yeah, but in both sides you can have a light touch.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people lived during the 60s, or the 50s, or the 40s in industry, and you can read any number of books that'll tell you what went on in industry during the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah.
But how many of them tell you about what it meant?
Mm-hmm.
The people who lived in the industries in the 40s, 50s.
Yeah, that's the
from personal
that
experience.
You don't get.
From
that's
personal
right.
experience, you don't get.
Yeah.
And I think that has something to do with the bull lying down. That's just my own. There was somebody there who told you what the impact was of the bull lying down. Well, I don't know. You really want to pay for those?
Well,
I don't care whether you do or not.
First 24.
All right.
I have to make a supplementary payment for the others. No, I appreciate that. Now, but I was wrong about that, wasn't I? I figured every 10-foot, and even for a tree, they need to be close.
I would put them as close as you can afford, and leave room for the roots not to get too much involved with each other. 5 feet's plenty.
Yeah. And what you're doing there, don't watch out, it'll grow up, and then down the bottom, it'll
be open.
Be open.
But I think you'll get both. You'll get them to come together quicker, and by the time they get up 10 feet, they'll be one solid row.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be very little space.
That'd be nice. And they'll get up as high as a house.
As high as they want to go. Which is high.
Depending on the ground.
And how much they trim. I can't see that as ever being a problem, the ground. If that's the way that soil is kept,
like
plowed in,
really.
The ground, the grass is plowed in periodically to mulch and rot. Those things grow in pure sand, just plain old white sand.
Oh, do they?
They turn a little bit lighter, they're not that dark green.
Sure.
It takes the nitrogen, of course, to make them the dark green.
But still, you get a good...